And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Life is a connection to a mystery. People connect online with each other, their computer components, with a sense of wonder, with people they like, with common sense, with history, nature, family, friends. In a moment, we're going to connect the segments of this show in a theme on connecting. So stay connected with our family of those who get it here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Hello to all my friends from across America and from around the world. Welcome to the Wild Side News. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and it's always great to talk with you. This is a show about connecting. So much of life and nature is made up of connections. As you hear me, we're connecting via the internet. Connections keep coming up on the Wild Side News. I've been trying to connect lots of people, doing all sorts of things, so that we can unite our sense of wonder and our appreciation for the gifts of the wild and make sure it's around for a very long time. I've been sharing the corridor concepts of wildlife management, connecting smaller units of land together to let the wild creatures roam more openly. It's a critical connection. And today, we will be expanding on this connection theme. We start out talking about a legendary connection, namely the historic connecting of the eastern and western halves of the Transcontinental Railroad in 1869 near Promontory, Utah. The pounding of the legendary Golden Spike is something we've all romanced about. We'll be talking shortly with Melissa Colburn, the chief ranger at the Golden Spike National Monument. Then in our second segment, we'll connect with Robin Brown, who will give you all you need to know about this week's National River Cleanup. She'll join us, and we'll be inviting you and many others to call in our toll-free number to talk about this great tribute to our tributaries and streams. So get ready to call in 888-327-0061. And in our third segment, we focus on one of the most amazing stories I'll probably ever cover here on the Wild Side News. We're going to explore the wonders of connection between humans and animals when life itself matters. We'll be talking with David Ball and his friend Hawk, his canine companion. The story of the bond between these two wonderful beings is one you will want to stick around for. So we'd best get on with today's Wild Side News. And now the news. All of these stories actually come from the news page on the Wild Side website. So when you're looking for a source for great news, you know where to go. Let's talk about the news. German researchers have determined that birds living in large cities are having to sing louder so they can be heard by other birds over the din of traffic and other noises. A study of nightingales in metropolitan Berlin showed that the male birds were forced to raise their voices even in the middle of the night, so females could hear them. German field biologists have noted that a similar behavior has been evident in German pubs for many years. Speaking of noise, after a 17-year nap, trillions of red-eyed insects are crawling their way above ground in 14 states and the nation's capital. The cicadas are emerging as a unique form of air and noise pollution. Their life cycle involves remaining dormant for 17 years, then appearing in mass all about the same time. Then they disappear for another 17 years. Loud and rather awkward, the cicadas fly clumsily into just about anything, pets, pedestrians, bushes, and backyards, as they carry out their frenzied attempts at mating, which lasts well into June. The noise produced by the masses of males trying to attract females can be quite astonishing. Some scientists have noted that most humans, if deprived of sex for 17 years, would exhibit similar aberrant tendencies. A new apocalyptic movie about climate change to be released May 28th is likely to start a flood of climate-related news coverage with its release. The Day After Tomorrow, by the makers of the epic Independence Day, tells the story of a series of sudden climate events that trigger superstorms, massive sea level rise, and ultimately the return of glaciers to Manhattan. Scientists have generally touted a gradualist model of climate change. However, some paleoclimactic data substantiate more sudden change, but none quite this fast, taking years rather than days. The movie is sure to warm up the talking heads, which may actually add to the possibility of sudden massive climate change. Jumping to San Francisco, California biologists are alarmed over the latest invasive species to take up residence in San Francisco. African clawed frogs are posing an unusual challenge to the balance of this urban ecosystem. According to David Wake, emeritus professor of integrative biology at the University of California in Berkeley, they are a threat. They change the environment quite profoundly. And what's worse, they're kind of cute, which means kids will collect them and put them into neighborhood ponds where they then spread even more quickly. Native to Kenya, the frogs are very tolerant of varying conditions, being able to live under ice, in the ground, and in brackish water. Their appetite is eclectic, as they relish insects, fish, lizards, and even birds, which they fit into their large, tongueless mouths. The frogs, outlawed as pets, have been used in San Francisco's medical and biomedical research facilities. A year-long investigation of federal data and records of hard rock mining operations gives the public its first comprehensive look at who profits most from public land mineral leases. Of the 5.6 million acres with claims, 1.2 million acres are foreign-owned. 82 of the 92 foreign-owned rights are owned by Canadian interests. Based on the 1872 mining law, mineral leases are sold generally for less than $5 per acre, do not require royalty payments, and often result in billions of dollars of cleanup costs. A recent sale of mining rights of 120 acres of mountaintop land for hard rock extraction at $5 per acre in an exclusive Colorado town renewed interest in the efficacy of the 1872 mining law. And on a truly positive note, the Nature Conservancy and Great Northern Paper have worked out a creative agreement to protect more than 240,000 acres of forest lands around Maine's Mount Katahdin. The partnership will preserve property that contains the highest concentration of remote ponds in New England and encompasses a 15-mile portion of the 100-mile wilderness section of the Appalachian Trail. The agreement transfers 41,000 acres to the Conservancy and places conservation easements on another 200,000 acres in exchange for the Conservancy restructuring a loan. Thus providing needed revenues which will help maintain the local economy. The Nature Conservancy is a leading force in creative land management to preserve genetic diversity. Now, a few announcements, and this is one that I find really exciting. I just got notification that the American Hiking Society has a terrific invitation. They're inviting you to take a volunteer vacation. Are you ready for this? This summer, to help construct or rebuild footpaths, cabins, and shelters in a variety of extraordinary locations. This is the American Hiking Society. As a volunteer, you will work in stunning backcountry locations, meet new people, explore canyons, peaks and valleys, enjoy quiet evenings around a fire, and come home refreshed and rejuvenated. And here's the best part. Imagine this. You can take this vacation for 1 or 2 weeks for $100 or less. Now, these are available all over the country, but there are some that are really exciting, and people are looking to sign up now. So I'd like you to get a piece of paper and write these down. I'll give you a moment to get ready, because you'll want to, this is an amazing opportunity to, if you've been thinking about taking a vacation, what a way to do it, getting back into the country and doing some great work and it almost costs you nothing. So anyways, I'm going to tell you about some very specific opportunities here. So get your paper and then take down these numbers, and ultimately you can find out more about this by going to the AmericanHiking.org. Shirley Hearn is a volunteer program manager. Okay, take these numbers down. Number 10, vacation number 10. Six Rivers National Forest in Arcata, California. This will be June 20th through the 27th. Number 35 is June 20th through the 27th in Salem, Oregon. Number 41, the 13th through the 26th of June in Monte LaSalle National Forest in Utah. And there's more. So I'd like you to contact Shirley Hearn at the American Hiking Society. And I'm going to give you her phone number. It's 800-972-8606, extension 206. Ask for Shirley Hearn. I'll repeat, 800-972-8606, extension 206. Well, it was 135 years ago this past May that a legendary connection took place near Promontory, Utah. The pounding of the golden spike signaled a dramatic change in America and the expanding westward movement into the wild places. Talking to us now from the Golden Spike National Historic Site is Melissa Coburn, Chief Ranger. Melissa, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney. It's good to be here.
You know, I always like to find out sort of what the weather's like to give people across the country here a sense of our great nation. What's happening in Utah right now?
Oh, it's a gorgeous day here at Promontory Summit. We're under a nearly cloudless sky. We've got a gentle breeze blowing, and the temperature is about 50 degrees.
Well, that sounds delightful. It's spring in the high country there. Well, this is you work with the Golden Spike National Historic Site. Give us a little history of how this site came to be.
Okay. Well, as you know, this is just a great story that's memorialized here, the building and completion of the Transcontinental Railroad, which took place on May 10th, 1869. And for very many years, nothing was done with this site. There just wasn't anything here except a white concrete marker that was erected by the Southern Pacific Railroad around the turn of the century. So several years later, the local folks really recognized what an important site this was and started a grassroots effort to have this made into a National Park Service site. And their efforts came to fruition in July of 1965 when this was designated Golden Spike National Historic Site and put under the stewardship of the National Park Service.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit about this legendary moment when... well, you can tell us that story better than I ever will. Tell us the story of 1869 and that moment, the Golden Spike.
Well, it truly was a great moment in American history. Two railroad companies, the Central Pacific, started in Sacramento, California, and worked their way east. The Union Pacific Railroad Company started in Omaha, Nebraska, and worked their way west. And these two railroad companies just overcame great odds as far as finances, terrain, finding workers to, you know, complete the construction of the railroad. And finally, in this last burst of enthusiastic effort, they crossed northern Utah and met on May 10, 1869, and actually completed the Transcontinental Railroad 6 years ahead of schedule.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, how many people were at that event?
You know, that's a good question. Reports vary wildly. They vary anywhere between 200 to over 1,000. So it's really difficult to say. There was, you know, a group here that day, but there was so much trouble with reporters being able to hear. Of course, they didn't have sound systems, you know, that sort of thing, that we'll never be quite sure exactly how many people were here in 1869.
On the website, I have images of some of the engines actually as they exist at your site now. They're extremely, I call them extremely brightly colored. We don't usually see engines that are red and blue. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's an interesting story.
It is interesting, and it's one of the things that really draws people to this site. And they always ask us, you know, were these special locomotives that were created for the ceremony in 1869? And no, the two locomotives that were here in 1869, the ones that we have replicas, working replicas of now, they were that brightly colored. And I think it's important for folks to remember what time in America that we're talking about here. We're talking about the Victorian age, the Gilded Age. when there was, it was very important that things be very decorative, and if you had money, you definitely wanted other people to know it. And so that's what these locomotives were a reflection of, and certainly the Transcontinental Railroad was seen as, you know, this crowning achievement for America, and it was also a great advertisement for the railroads. And so it was very typical that locomotives of that time were very, very brightly colored, very highly decorated. And so our replica engines here are a reflection of that time and truly a reflection of the two original locomotives, the Jupiter and the number 119.
You know, I hear that you fire them up every day, and I guess you move them around a little bit, which certainly would be exciting for anybody to witness. And I also understand that you're kind of in a remote area, so if people want to see the site, I guess there's a little bit of planning they need to do, and we have about a minute left. So tell us what how people should plan to come to your site, how much time they should expect to spend, and let's start with that.
Okay, first of all, check out our website. You can go to www.nps.gov and look for Golden Spike. That'll give you the most current information, or you could give us a call. Our number's on our website. Please realize that we're 32 miles from the closest town. You'll want to get gas. You'll want to get water. You'll want to get food before you come out here. Different things take place at different time of the year, obviously due to snow and things like that. Sometimes parts of the park are closed, and the locomotives are only out in the summer months. So if you really want to see those, try to plan your visit during the summer.
Also, I hear there's a rather interesting auto tour that's available.
Mm-hmm. That's true. We have the East and West Auto Tours, a wonderful opportunity for visitors to actually take their own vehicles, and they can drive on the old railroad grade. That's actually the earthen bed on which the rails were placed. And so it's very nice to drive that and imagine what it might have been like to travel by rail across northern Utah in the 1800s.
Next time I'm driving through, Melissa, I'm definitely going to stop by. Thanks so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
And when we return to the Wild Side News, we're going to be talking about the National River Cleanup Week.